Today's episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by Best Fiends. Download the 5-star rated puzzle game Best Fiends free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Today on The Grave Talks, a real life haunted attraction. What should have simply been a fun local haunted attraction turned out to be anything but. Barnaby Capps would quickly learn that the haunted attraction he purchased was far more than just a building with props and spooky objects. Who was haunting the attraction, and why were they so drawn to this haunted location? Did the sheer idea of it being haunted lead the dead to its door? That's what we discuss today on The Grave Talks.
I think it probably started for me in elementary school. I can't remember really when I got into paranormal, but I remember in elementary school, it was when the Chupacabra was just starting out in Mexico and stuff like that. And I was really interested in that. I wrote a research paper on it, and I did a lot of looking up into that. And then going into middle school and high school, I started doing more of the paranormal investigations. Used to hang out at cemeteries late at night and all that stuff. And it wasn't until I owned a hearse, and the hearse led to owning a haunted house, like an attraction haunted house. Mm-hmm. And I ran Misery Haunted House for 7 years total. And for 3 of those years, we were in a building that was historically claimed to be haunted. And that's where I first started having some real paranormal experiences, and that kind of led through that.
Okay, prior to getting into the world of attraction haunted houses, tell me about, like, what was your belief system in this sort of thing, even being something? I mean, I totally get being into that. I myself, I love those things. I create the radio commercials for some of the biggest ones in the country. I own the website hauntedhouseradiocommercials.com and hauntedhousetvcommercials.com. So I very familiar with that world, and it's fun, but it's not obviously the real thing. It's just, you know, getting out there and enjoying the atmosphere and having fun with the season. So, but prior to that, obviously you got a passion for that area. What was your mindset of, of that area?
I've always had kind of like a little bit of paranormal experience, you know, like I've felt things, and, you know, I've not really had too much, you know, I never had a sighting of a ghost or anything, or, you know, heard the whispering and voices or any of that stuff. But I always kind of, you know, felt like something was watching me at times, or, you know, something else was there. So I always really believed in the paranormal. And, you know, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, all of those things, you know, it was always a possibility.
So the idea was there, but you never actually had the experiences. So tell me more about, you get into this world of, okay, we're going to have this fun. We're going to do the haunted house. We're going to bring people in, and it's an attraction, but it's all in fun. Yep. Tell me how things kind of progressed from there to actually getting that inkling that, oh my God, there's maybe something going on here beyond just our spooky things that we're setting up here.
Right. Well, when we moved in there, there was a paranormal group that was actually based out of the building, and another haunted house up on the second floor. So when we moved in, we already knew that supposedly the place was haunted and that there had been activity through the years and everything. And right away from when we started setting up, we had a 5-foot like fire egress around the whole building. And so our outer walls of the haunt were set up there. And at times we would, right away when we were setting this stuff up, we heard a little boy or a child like giggling at us while we're out there, like just building walls. I mean, this is a big empty building where we were setting up and that, and there was nobody there. Mm-hmm. And we heard this child like giggling at us. And I remember coming around the end of one of those hallways. These things are about 150 feet long on the sides of the building. And there was like a shadow of a child peeking around the end of the wall at the far end at me. And that was the first time I think I saw anything out there. But, I mean, we had activity from just setting up walls. I mean, as soon as we got there.
So what's going through your mind? You're out there, you're setting this thing up, and you see what you believe to be like the shadow of a child. I mean, is that the initial thing that goes through your mind, that there's a shadow of a child over here, or is your mind trying to explain it 50 other ways?
No, I mean, like, when we moved in, like I said, we were told the place was haunted and that there was, you know, there was supposed to be a little girl upstairs and stuff. And so it just kind of seemed reasonable, I guess, that, sure. Oh, yeah, there's a little ghost, you know, just watching us. And when I'd be out there working, you know, the floors were really old cement and that. And when I'm standing in that fire egress hallway, I was working on the pneumatics of a prop. And I heard these footsteps approaching me down the hallway, and you can clearly see I'm the only one in the building, and there is no one walking towards me. Mm-hmm. So we had, you know, everything out there, and it's just, you know, what else is it? You know, you have no other explanation. There's obviously nobody else there. So
what's going through your mind at that moment? I mean, how are you processing this?
I wish I had a camera.
Okay.
I wish I had an audio recorder. I wish I had something, you know, like I said, I was interested in all the stuff. I just had never had experience to the degree of without a doubt. You know, it was always more like feelings of being watched or something up to being in this building. And then all of a sudden you have all these phenomenon just right there in your face, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're having that sort of experience right there in your face. I mean, tell me more. How did things progress as you're trying to get this attraction ready, you know, for the public and trying to get your staff and everybody ready to, you know, to do their jobs, essentially?
Right. So things did progress to the point where the most, I'll get into this right away, I guess, the most intense experience that I ever had out there, and still one of my most... the biggest paranormal experience I've had so far. So there was two skylights in the building, and we're working on this all summer into August, September and stuff. So it stays light out pretty late. And, we had all, you know, the little LED lighting to light the attraction. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't set and focus all this lighting because of the skylights. So I worked first shift, and I had to go into work pretty early on a Saturday. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go home, I'm going to sleep, and then I'm going to get up early and go work on the haunt and then go to work after that. So I would be out there probably from like 10 o'clock at night till 3 in the morning. I got to the haunt, I started turning on things, and I went out to work on one of this swamp area that we had. And so the room is, I came into it backwards from a big castle scene. And you come through this big styrofoam arch into the swamp area. And there's big styrofoam blocks on the ground with all like ferns and floral and stuff stabbed into it. And there's a big waterfall in the middle of the room. And then you go back into the next room. So there are these big 6-foot silk trees, mm-hmm. you know, like fake trees. And they're all in this room as well. I'm the only person in the building. The landlord isn't there. I know I'm the only one there because we went back and looked at security cameras and everything. Nobody's in or out of this building. So I walked into that room, and the only lighting I had was a couple little LED spotlights that I was going into there to reposition and check. Mm-hmm. And I'm at the far end looking back towards the castle, and one of the trees on the side of the waterfall, there's one branch that's just lightly bobbing. And that might not sound very weird or anything, but we're in the middle of a haunted house. You know, there's 8-foot walls all the way around me in the middle of the haunt. There's no wind, there's no breeze, there's no air movement. On a hot summer day, it's over 100 degrees in there.
Sure.
So there's no air movement. There's no reason why this branch is moving. So it kind of caught me off guard. I turned on, I had a little like, I didn't do that yet. So I'm looking at this branch moving and I'm thinking, why is that moving? So I started walking back towards it and I turned on my headlamp. I had like a baseball cap headlamp and, I turned it on and I'm looking at this branch and I got about, I'd say 2 feet or so away from it on the other side of this, styrofoam, dock float is mm-hmm. what they were. And so that's about a foot and a half off the ground. And the tree starts to violently shake. And I took a step back to see if, you know, somebody was standing behind it shaking it or what. And as soon as I stepped back, the tree flew across where I had just been standing and now was laying across the walkway.
All right, back to our conversation in just a moment. First, I want to thank our supporter today, the 5-star rated puzzle game, Best Fiends. This is a great thing if you're looking to kind of get things feeling good this summer, sitting out, enjoying the outdoors, maybe by the pool, barbecue, maybe playing on your phone a little bit. Have some Best Fiends with you on that mobile device. You'll love it. It is super fun. It's super refreshing. It really is. It's like a tall, cool glass of lemonade. But it's for your mind. It is. You can play it anywhere, anytime on your mobile device. The fun is there. It's super, super something that just pulls you in. There's new updates all the time. There's new levels all the time. There's new characters all the time. So it never, ever gets old. It's one of those games that makes 30 minutes feel like 30 seconds, and it's totally free to download. Check it out for yourself. Download the 5-star rated puzzle game Best Fiends, free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends.
Yeah.
So what's going through your mind as this is happening?
My first thought is that the landlord is out there screwing with me, because obviously, like I said, I didn't see his truck or anything when I got there, you know, but, you know, he's there late at night sometimes and that. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact he wasn't, because we checked the security cameras and everything. There's nobody in there. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I'm thinking, okay, somebody's behind this messing with me, and which is why I stepped back kind of to look behind there, and there was nothing. Nobody there. There's a wooden pallet that's vertical behind there. And there's no way a person could be back there. Mm-hmm. And I had chills, and I'm just like, I don't know what the heck just happened. So I looked around, and I'm like, nope, I'm done for the night. And I got out of there. I went and I shut everything off. And I guess like security camera says that I was out of there in 31 seconds.
New record, yeah.
I was out. I had everything shut down, powered off, and out that door. So we went back the next day, and it was me and my mom and another builder that was out there and stuff. And we looked at this thing, and we tried to debunk it. It was still laying right where I left it. Mm-hmm. I took pictures of it. You know, like the old Weebles, the
sure.
toys?
Yeah.
You can pull it over, and it kind of wiggles back to standing and stuff. Mm-hmm. So this tree has a cement base and like a little basket that it sits in. If you grab it and pull it over about, we'll say like a 30 to 45 degree angle, it wiggles right back to its standing up.
Okay.
So whatever pushed this thing over had a lot of energy to get it not only just to fall over, but over that like foot and a half tall, probably 2 foot wide, styrofoam block that was on the ground as well. And like I said, we checked the security cameras. My security cameras were set up to the point to watch the people coming through the haunt. Mm-hmm. So obviously they're aimed reverse of the way that I was in the haunt. So all you can see in the pitch black is my headlight like flicker back and forth looking at this, and then I take off. Because they're not aimed at the tree. You just like see it over on the side, and it's not bright enough in there to
sure.
see what actually happens. So I don't have the video saved, but I did take pictures of it laying on the ground. But yeah, so that was my most intense experience out there. And after that, we started, we opened up, because that was right in, I think, August, late August when that happened. And a lot of our actors started having experiences out there. So then we started investigating. Every night that, you know, something big happened, we'd go out there and start videoing or, you know, doing EVP sessions or whatever and trying to investigate and see if anything would actually communicate with us.
Yeah. So as you began kind of going down that route, I mean, was there any hesitation or anything, or was there any concern, or was it just kind of like, this is really cool? I mean, it's spooky, it's creepy, you already got your haunted house going that's, you know, not necessarily intended for this type of haunted house, but it's happening. I mean, what was your mindset there of investigating? I mean, had anyone had any experience doing things like that before, or was everybody kind of a novice to this idea of actually investigating?
Well, my other actor that was out there, his name is Derek. He's on my team now as well. He is a medium. And so he's done, like, investigating and stuff. He's been doing it for years. And I've worked with him before on little stuff prior to the haunted house, but nothing really, you know, as big or as intense as this stuff. So we went in there and we started investigating just to try and communicate, because like we said, there was other activity recorded there in the past and stuff, so we wanted to try and see what we could get on our own. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was kind of like, you know, you can scare, you know, the customers coming through and you can have your fun, but when you're messing with my actors that have to be here for, you know, 5 hours a night in the dark, you know, by themselves, that's not okay. So we approached the whole situation like that, where we'd go in and be like, hey, you know, here's your chance. If you have something you want to say, if you, you know, want to move something, throw something, do it now. But don't do it when my, you know, 12-year-old girl is in this room scared, mm-hmm. you know, half to death, because she's just here to, you know, act, and all of a sudden, you know, things are flying off the shelf at her, you know. So,
so I mean, how did she... You know, how did your actors feel about all this? I mean, obviously there's a lot of people, a lot of different feelings that would be all kind of, you know, coming down at once. But I mean, what was the process of all of this for everybody? How did they take this?
Well, some took it pretty well. Some of them were interested in it, obviously. We had a couple instances. Okay, so one of the first nights that we were open, the landlord had one of his friends over or something, and they were smoking cigars in the basement of the building, which triggered the smoke detectors. And we had a fire alarm go off. So we all evacuated the building, figured out what it was, came back in, and my one actor in this little, like, doll bedroom thing walks in, and one of the dolls is standing up in the middle of the floor. And it had been sitting up on top of a dresser.
Mm-hmm.
So she was really freaked out. She didn't want to be in that room anymore. And then basically through the wall from the bedroom area was what we called the pet shop. And it was all animal cages and, like, stuffed animals and taxidermy and stuff like that. And, the one night I walked in there and my actor was, she hadn't been in that room before. And, I walked in there and she's sitting on the floor, like, clutching her knees to her chest, just repeating the Lord's Prayer over and over and over. I'm like, what is wrong? And she's like, I don't want to be in this room. I don't like it. Something's in this room. I can't be in here. So I moved her out. I put a different actor in that room. About halfway through the night, that was a girl as well, she got very sick. She had a migraine. She felt like she was going to throw up. She ended up going home. At this point, I sent Derek, my medium paranormal investigator, I put him in the room. And then he basically just yelled and talked to it all night. So he was happy in there. But yeah, so, it was intense for a while. Yeah.
So some kind of made a little more peace with it than others. Some were very disturbed by it, and rightfully so. Were you guys wondering, okay, what is this? What is the source of this? Why is this sort of thing happening?
Yeah, we looked into the history of the building, and we even looked into the history of the land. Eventually, I ended up doing a whole episode for my YouTube show on this. I interviewed a bunch of my actors and everything, and and we put that out. But there's nothing really majorly associated with it, like no like Native American burial grounds or anything. In fact, the Native American burial grounds that are in the area are like across the river, so we know that they're there, but they're not near where the building was, you know. So there's no deaths in the building aside from the actual landlord died in the building. He used to do septic pumping, and when the building was still in business before he bought it, him and his partner were in there draining a septic tank, and his partner got trapped in there. He went in to save him and ended up either drowning or asphyxiating, I can't remember, and he was pronounced dead at the scene, and they took him to the hospital and ended up reviving him there, but he actually died in the building. So that's the only death that's recorded with the building.
It's so interesting. I mean, do you have any? And we always jump to death. You know, we always, when we think of a house or something of that, we always go to, oh, who died here? And I think sometimes that is a bit of a leap. I think sometimes it's not always the death that we need to look at to explain a haunting. I think sometimes it's more so what happened with the living while they were there, regardless of where they died or how they died, as far as what actions, what energy was expelled in that building. Because, I mean, you could have someone who was a wonderful person, absolutely nothing bad about them, lived in the place their whole life, and then they died, you know, 7 years later in a car accident in Paducah. And, you know, they end up haunting the place. But there's no real reason for them to haunt it other than maybe they loved the location. Then you also can have the person who was abusive and horrible and did all sorts of atrocities to individuals and, you know, died in the building, and yet they do absolutely nothing in terms of the haunting. But maybe sometimes those actions, those energies, is what can cause some of the hauntings. Do you have any information as far as what life was like there for anyone who did spend time in the house when it was not a haunted attraction, but more so a place called home?
Well, it wasn't a house. It was actually a factory.
Okay.
It was the Berlin Tannery.
Okay.
So it actually Berlin, was.
Is this Berlin in what state?
Wisconsin.
No shit. I know where it is because there's a really cool antique store that's in a church that's right down the road from that.
Yep.
Yes.
One of my actor's parents owned that.
Oh, that's a cool place too. I'd love to talk about that place too. I grew up in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and in high school years, I had a girlfriend who lived in Berlin. So many a years I would drive from there to Berlin. It was considered long distance back then. And I know where the tannery is located. So, yes. So you're in the tannery building. Wow. That's a creepy building and a very old structure as well. Mm-hmm. Wow. So tell me more about what was life like in the actual tannery, I mean, itself, while it was in operation? Because, I mean, those sort of things were not necessarily, I mean, OSHA standards didn't really exist. And, you know, it could kind of be a rough life sometimes in those sort of locations. I remember there was one in my hometown, Roopings, I believe was the name of it, it still smelled till they tore it down in the late 90s. And I know the standards weren't the greatest there either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not really sure too much about, like, you know, the day-to-day of the tannery. We've been through the whole building. You know, I can tell you how it worked, you know, where the leather was tanned and dried and all that stuff. But as far as, like, I couldn't really tell you anything about, you know, the people that worked there.
Yeah.
We didn't really find out a lot of the personal history and stuff. Another thing I was going to say, though, is that with being a haunted house, we have all kinds of weird things. You know, we get them from, you know, antique stores or rummage sales or, you know, auctions, all kinds of stuff. So any of this stuff could have stuff attached to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily that the building itself was haunted, but possibly something that was in it. The landlord had a ton of just weird stuff as well. I believe that the other paranormal group that was in there believed that the little girl was attached to this coin-operated, you know, like merry-go-round thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you come out of the grocery store and it's sitting out there.
Yeah.
And that was in there, and I think that's what they had said that the little girl was attached to. But so it's not necessarily the building, like you said, or mm-hmm. you know, the death that was there, but other things that could possibly be in it. So
as word kind of continues to spread here amongst your actors and your staff and such that this is more than just a haunted house, but the house is haunted. Is there any, you know, dissent among the ranks going, this is more than I signed up for, I'm out? Or I mean, how was it all handled?
About, you know, 90% of anybody that wants to work at a haunted house is into that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So it went over pretty well. there were some areas of the building that were a lot creepier than others. And even myself would be bolting through those areas if it was dark out or something, because they just didn't feel right, you know?
Yeah.
And the upstairs specifically, like downstairs we were out in a hangar.
Mm-hmm.
It was like an extension of the building. But the main building itself, if you went upstairs, that was probably the creepiest part of that place.
Tell me about that part of the building. Why was it so creepy?
It was all wood. I don't know if that makes a difference to it, but it just had a weird feeling. Like the floors are all you know, worn down wood. The leather carts and stuff that they were there wore like paths in it and stuff. So mm-hmm. you had this like worn area of it. All the ceiling was all wood and old cobwebby. Dark, even if there's like the windows right by you there, you know, at night it's pitch black in there.
Mm-hmm.
And to try and go between there, it just had a weird feeling. So when you went from my downstairs, eventually I ended up buying the haunted house that was upstairs as well, so I owned them both. And when you had to go between one to the other to do work or build something there, it was always creepy going through that one, the middle section up there, or anywhere upstairs for that matter.
At any time, did you feel like there was any sort of risk involved here, or did you feel like there was any sort of threat to yourself or anybody while doing this?
I don't think so. I think whatever was in there was kind of more just like practical joke.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they wanted to throw that tree at me, they could have. But instead they chose to throw it like next to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing ever was thrown at me. That's not the only thing that moved. Back to that pet shop area, we had a cage, like it was a homemade wooden cage, animal cage, and we had this plastic turkey decoy, kind of like an umbrella. And you push the thing up in the back and it opened up. Well, this turkey sitting in a cage, and there was three of us in there at the time, and we were setting up a new a desk counter in there and putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the turkey lunge forward in the cage, and my other actor, I think they saw it out of like the corner of their eye. And the other one heard it. So it shot forward maybe like an inch or so,
mm-hmm.
but it was really quick. And it moved. I mean, it's not like it was stuck in place or something. It jarred forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that, like we said, there were certain hot spots in that building, and the pet shop doll room right there, that section of the building, mm-hmm. Was where a lot of the girls didn't like working. Though okay. another actor in there saw, like I said, we had the fire egress hallway, and she said that the curtain for the hallway got pulled back at about the height of a child.
Okay.
Like, a child had like opened it, peered in, and then went back. And then she would hear, like, footsteps in the hallway. She'd go and look out there, and there was nobody there. So it was like this little child was just, you know, peeking in at her or something, you know.
So what was – we've talked about your staff and your actor's response to these stories and yours as well. But what about the public? Was the public aware of any of these things? Were there grumblings going on about any of these stories as these things started to happen? I guess I should preface that in, like, what year were these things initially kind of being reported in?
The building has been reportedly haunted for quite a while. Like I said, before we got there, there was already a haunted house in the building. You know, he'd been doing ghost tours and stuff, the landlord, for a while. So the building already had the history of being haunted. Years prior to us being in there, there was another haunted house in the building. So it goes back quite a ways, ever since it had closed, you know. And then but all the customers and stuff going through, they're like, man, you got, you know, the perfect location here. It is so creepy. And you know, it just was, it had the look of a creepy haunted house building. It's on sure. a dead end road, and you know, there's a dilapidated factory on the other side of it that's all, like, it was being torn down at the time when we left. But mm-hmm. yeah, so it was very well known as a haunted location.
That wraps up part one of our conversation. In part two, what was the public's reaction to knowing that the haunted attraction was, in fact, truly haunted? Is there anything that the actors or staff does that triggers the activity within the location? What kind of reports did the guests of the haunt say to the owner of the attraction? And who is the little girl that haunts the now abandoned tannery? All that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Help keep our show in the air and get access to part two of our conversations, all of our part twos, including advanced episodes of the show. That's what keeps us on the air. Be sure to visit Barnaby's website, wisconsincaps.com, wisconsincaps.com. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.